move were worth it. Kind of like with people. What? Her free-flowing thoughts spun like a potter's wheel, making them tough to follow. And yet, he was certain that, when pieced together, the pattern would be more colorful and complex than Haitian mosaic artwork. Marketing a product isn't all that different from marketing ourselves.
You think people need to sell themselves?
She laughed in his face. Of course you wouldn't think so, Mr. Humanitarian, devoting his life to saving the world. You don't need to think about what makes you special. You just are. Gentry swigged more wine and averted her eyes. The unspoken implication that she was unlike him rang out as if she'd shouted it through a bullhorn. Now he understood something important and sad about Gentry Cabot. Beneath all her bling and sarcasm, she didn't think she had a single thing that made her desirable or worth the effort. He utterly disagreed. He also knew that no designer label or tattoo or tough attitude would be a substitute for self-esteem. In addition to caring for Colt, he made a private vow to help her see herself in a better light before he quit. She laid her head against the back of the chair and started talking to herself. The tea you know. Charity you know. On the go? No. Silence. Charity on the go. A smile formed, and she looked at him with her first truly happy expression of the evening. Charity on the go. That's better than charity begins with you.
Maybe, but it still doesn't hammer home the fact that buying your product directly contributes to building a better world.
She frowned. Maybe that's it.
What?
The better world. That's it. She held up her hand, eyes focused in the distance, and thought for a while longer. Thirst for a better world. Well, but this satisfies thirst, so that isn't quite right. Maybe quenching your thirst for a better world? Or quench your thirst for a better world?
That works.
It's longer than charity begins with you, but it has more punch than the current slogan. It doesn't address the convenience element, but I might not win that battle. This is something, though. Something to prove I'm not useless.
Useless?
She waved her hand, her expression sealing itself up as tight as a clam. You know, getting back up to speed and all. He doubted that was all, but he didn't push. The branding debate seemed like a lot of fuss about iced tea, but she looked so relieved and pleased, like she'd solved the Israeli-Palestinian conflict. He wished his goals were so easily accomplished. After spending part of Colt's naps today, talking to Archer about the single biggest threat to their success, a shortage of suppliers and vehicles, he'd brainstormed ideas to source those items. A daunting task for a guy without wealthy connections. Suddenly, Gentry snapped her fingers. Hello? Where'd you go?
Sorry, just thinking about my own plans.
Her green eyes lit up with interest as she leaned forward and rested her chin on her fist. The glass door behind her became a mirror. In its reflection, they looked like a couple on a date. What plans?
My father's friend Archer Cook and I recently formed an NGO in Haiti to train locals to become EMTs. We have one local, Stanley, on board with us at this point, and we're working with local hospital administrators to structure something that will complement its service. Teaching people basic life-saving skills will improve lives in communities with little or no access to adequate health care. Our biggest challenge now is getting vehicles and an ongoing source of supplies.
Wow. She sat back again. You want to live there, like, full time? Isn't it dangerous?
I'd avoid pockets like Carrefour and Cité Soleil, Matisson.
We're setting up on the coast, in Jacmel.
I know zip about Haiti, other than it's hot and poor. Very poor. They have a saying about wishing they were lucky enough to be dirt poor. Deforestation started way back with the French and continued through the mid-80s with the clear-cutting of the Haitian-Dominican border, so dirt gets easily washed away during storms, which makes it hard to grow fruit and other food. There've been efforts to cultivate more trees in recent decades. It's having some impact, but poverty is a huge problem.
For a second, he flashed to a memory of some young aides tossing candy at kids in the street. He'd been smiling at their generosity until his father pointed out the shop vendor sitting outside his empty store, sun glaring off his sweaty face, watching potential sales die. Ironically, many who went to help only made things harder and took resources from those in real need.
Can't you manage that without living someplace so unsafe and unhappy?
Safety, happiness, those were things he hoped to give others, so he would make the sacrifice. It was his privilege to do so, in fact. But he didn't want to preach or talk about his dad, his bittersweet connection to Haiti. The place? Grave, where he felt both closest to and yet most distant from his dad.
I'll manage.
But why?
Unfinished business.
Cryptic.
He shrugged, hoping to sidestep her probing. Demonstrating a talent for intuition, she shifted directions.
Do you speak French?
A little. Most locals speak Haitian Creole. I know enough to get by, but I'm getting better. Stanley's been teaching me when I'm there.
Her eyes twinkled.
Say something.
Côté lui fait mal.
Ew, kinda sexy, she smiled.
Hearing her call him, and the way he sounded, sexy, roused him intolerably.
What's it mean?
Where does it hurt?
He forced himself to think of an instance where he'd asked that question of a patient in order to move his thoughts away from Gentry's low voice, saying the word, sexy.
Oh, her smile fell. I guess most of what you do has to do with sick people.
He nodded. Not sexy at all.
Thank God.
She stared at him now, pushing her empty plate aside.
Are there many women who work there?
A fair amount. Why?
I'm wondering if you get lonely. This life plan of yours won't make finding love very easy. But I guess you already know that, or you wouldn't be homeless now, would you?
He wasn't ready to discuss Farah or his love life. The quickest way to shut down that conversation would be to turn it around on Gentry.
Being a single mom must be pretty lonely.
I'm not lonely, she insisted. I have my son.
That's not the kind of love that you're talking about.
Before he could stop himself, he added,
In fact, this conversation makes me wonder about Colt's dad.
Yeah. Well, get in line, she smirked and finished her wine.
Still off limits.
He almost held his breath, then felt stupid for being so curious. A few seconds ticked by, punctuated by a goose honk echoing off the lake below.
Oh, what the hell? Not like you'll be around long enough to judge me forever.
She pulled her knees back up to her chest.
The truth is, I don't know Colt's dad. I met him at a bar while on vacation in Napa. We had a one-night fling, and I only know him as Smith.
Oh.
Ian's thoughts ranged from thinking of how reckless she'd been with her life on one hand, and almost envying that sense of freedom. His mother had depended on him for so much in his father's absence that he'd never had much freedom at all. Every time you make that face, I'm going to call you McJ. Her commentary snapped him out of his thoughts. McJ? Short for McJudgy Pants, she smirked. Regardless, I can't regret that night. I love my bugaboo. As for Smith, let's just say he was hard to resist.
Then why didn't you try to find him? The ludicrous burst of jealousy brought him low.
I'm not looking for love, she snorted. Her words sounded a bit too practiced to be true. And that was beside the point, anyway.
Shouldn't Smith know he has a kid?
You can't help yourself, can you, McJay? Her expression turned from teasing to testy. It wasn't his business.
He knew that, yet he had to be honest. Speaking as a guy, I'd want to know.
Trust me on this. Smith is nothing like you. Her tone didn't sound like a compliment for either man.
What if Colt has questions about his father one day? Every kid wants to know his parents, even if you and Smith aren't a couple.
She didn't hit him hard with an immediate comeback, although her viper's gaze warned that she'd thought of one. For all I know, Smith could be married, or who knows what. My mom says we're better off letting that sleeping dog lie, so to speak. Yesterday, she'd proved how little she cared for her mother's opinions. That comment, however, might cause an explosion. He watched her gnaw at her thumbnail. She did that when she worried. I don't often follow my mom's advice, but she's raised enough concern to make me hesitate. Ian had a definite sense of the right thing to do, but this was not his decision to make. He'd be gone in a matter of weeks and didn't want to be held responsible for the consequences of whatever choice she made.
I guess you'll have to trust your gut to tell you what's right for your son.
Oh, Ian, haven't you figured out that trusting my gut almost always leads to trouble? She passed her remark off as a joke, but she didn't fool him. She looked away toward the lake, lost in thought. Then, abruptly, she stood and grabbed her plate. I think it's time I change into something more comfortable. Suddenly, as if only then noticing her words, she shot him a saucy look. A cheesy, playful, yet still sexy come on that he knew she didn't mean seriously. He should be relieved, he thought, as she sauntered into the house. The woman was trouble. She was reckless. She was, at times, lying to herself and others. Yet, she was daring, full of life, and surprisingly vulnerable. He closed his eyes and turned his thoughts away from Gentry and back to Haiti, to the way he could always feel the sun before he saw it, to the look of determination on his father's face as he went back into that building to search for a woman's missing child. Ian had a plan to honor his dad, and no one, not even someone as bewitching as Gentry Cabot, would deter him.
Chapter 6. Foolhardy. According to Merriam-Webster, foolishly adventurous and bold. Rash. According to me, searching for Colt's father. Also, pushing my slogans again on Hunter
and Mom. After yesterday's public debacle, Gentry exercised the benefit of being a Cabot for the first time since taking the job the previous fall. Luckily, Hunter and her parents agreed to a brief, private meeting in her dad's office. A place without interior windows so gossips and disgruntled co-workers couldn't watch and wonder. "Hi, Cindy," Gentry waved at her father's personal assistant. Cindy flashed a polite grin, the kind of smile that didn't give any hint of genuine emotion.
"Good morning."
Gentry entered her dad's expansive office, with windows that overlooked the adjacent, undeveloped land preserve. Unlike any visit to her mom's ornate office, where the thick red silk and wool Tibetan carpet and handmade live-edge mahogany desk hummed with her mother's tense energy, in here, she felt safe. Her father's space resembled the casual, no-nonsense appeal of the man himself. Standard beige commercial carpet, worn from foot traffic. Family photos on the credenza. Traditional but tired office furniture. No attempt to intimidate or impress. Just straightforward functionality that welcomed every guest. Her parents were seated at the small table in one corner, waiting for her and Hunter. Her dad's Lyme disease symptoms had abated during the past months, although he still had occasional flare-ups. Today, he appeared to be having a good day. She kissed him hello before taking a seat across from her mom.
"How's it working out with Ian?"
Her dad clasped her hand and squeezed. The gesture reminded her of when Ian had done the same last night. Her father's touch comforted and settled her.
Ian's had stirred up something else.
It troubled her, actually, that Ian got her to open up about things she didn't want to discuss.
"So far, so good."
"You seem a little more yourself today," her mom added. "On time, too."
Also, thanks to Ian.
Once she'd gotten over her pity party, she'd appreciated coming home to a clean house and a meal. To an adult who patiently listened and had his own stories to tell. It recharged her. And now, to know her son was in safe hands, she couldn't pay Ian enough for that peace of mind.
"Miracles happen."
Hunter walked in before the zingers escalated. His presence, confident, proud, handsome, absorbed their attention. Gentry had always tried to emulate his attitude. Her effort rang hollow because, unlike Hunter, she couldn't boast a string of accomplishments.
"Sorry, I'm late. I also have to duck out soon, so let's make this quick."
He sank onto a chair opposite their dad, removed his glasses to clean a smudge, and looked at her.
"What's up?"
Two of the world's most intimidating people were staring at her, so she turned to her father instead.
"I'll be quick, but let me finish before interrupting or rejecting my idea."
"Of course,"
her father said, before shooting her mom a pointed glance. Hunter and Jenna exchanged an impatient look. Anytime those two agreed, Gentry braced for a lightning strike or another natural disaster. Then again, those two had laid down their swords in recent months, and yet hell hadn't swallowed the earth.
"I thought more about the slogan," she began.
Her mother's exasperated inhalation, the kind that always made Gentry feel small, interrupted her. Determined to prove her confidence, she plowed through.
"The name, Cabot's Charity, embodies the USP. So I still think we should add the convenience factor to distinguish it from our regular teas. With that in mind, I thought of Charity on the Go."
But if you don't like that, then how about quench your thirst for a better world? At least that has some punch.
Gentry sat, fingers interlocked on her lap to keep from chewing her nails, and settled her gaze on Hunter. At the end of the day, Charity was his baby. Maybe his approval could trump her mother's rejection. When he grinned, an uncommon response at work, Gentry broke into a responding smile so big it could almost be mistaken for one of Sarah's. Her knee bounced happily beneath the table until she settled it with her hand.
I like the second one.
Hunter looked at their father.
Dad? Me too.
Her father patted her shoulder, nodding. The win sent her floating on air. For a millisecond, Gentry regretted the time she'd wasted in rebellion. Who might she be now if she'd followed in her siblings' footsteps sooner?
Mom?
Gentry tried not to hold her breath.
Good to see you getting your head back in the game.
Her mother drummed the fingers of her left hand upon the table while staring at the notepad onto which she'd written out both slogans.
They work.
Tepid.
Do you like them? Gentry hated the churning in her stomach and the yearning for some praise.
Let's take them to the marketing team for consensus and go from there.
Her mother's refusal to applaud her creativity deflated Gentry more quickly than a pinprick to a balloon. She fantasized about tossing her pen across the table like a dart aimed at her mother's forehead.
Great, I've got to run.
Hunter pushed back from the table and gave a quick wave.
See you all later.
As Hunter walked out, their dad said,
I gotta say, I'm happy to see us all working together.
He leaned back, arms crossed over his chest.
I wasn't convinced you did a good thing when you voted with your brother, but it's working out.
Let's hope so.
Her mom stood to leave. We'll know in another 3 months if this gamble was worth it. Last year, her mother had pushed to sell CTC to an international conglomerate. Hunter had pulled out every stop to prevent the sale, but Gentry held the tie-breaking vote. At the time, Hunter hadn't been speaking to her because of the whole failed adoption. She'd leveraged her vote in exchange for this job, knowing passing up that potential payday might be the only way to mend fences.
Putting the family to rights is more important than hitting a home run with this product, her dad replied.
10 years ago, he wouldn't have said that, but since his illness, her father's priorities had shifted somewhat. Sadly, her mother's hadn't.
Now you sound like Leslie.
Her mother summoned Gentry with one hand while taking a dig at Jed's ex-wife. If Hunter had still been in the office, he would have tossed a pen at her mom. Gentry had never known life without the Cabot inter-family tension. Peace had been a relative term, not a way of life. She'd vowed to do better for her own son. That vow had kept her up the previous night, causing her to mull over Ian's opinions about Smith and family. In a moment of clarity, she now came to another decision.
There's one more thing.
What?
Her mom asked, hugging her notepad and glancing at her watch.
I'm thinking of finding Smith.
Gentry kept her shoulders square, even as her body went a bit numb at the thought. Her mother's eyes rolled upward toward the ceiling, but her dad leaned forward, his expression sober but curious.
What's changed your mind?
Colt should know who his father is. More than that, he deserved a complete family, as opposed to a dysfunctional half of one.
Whether Ian or God or Sixth Sense toyed with her, she believed Smith would turn out to be a good guy. Not as good of a guy as Ian, most likely. But they'd hit it off before. Maybe they would again, and in doing so, could provide Colt the kind of security she'd never known. How will you possibly find a man whose name you don't even know? Her mother asked. It's a crazy long shot, but I know what he looks like and the hotel we were in. She remembered the outdoor shower of her cottage among the low-lying buildings of Carneros Resort and Spa, and the views across the fields to the distant mountains. I think I remember his room number, but I'm not positive. Her father shook his head, hand held high.
That's hard for me to hear, you know. Maybe think a little about your audience?
Sorry, Dad. She'd never given much thought to her impulsiveness. To the extent it had worried her parents in the past, she'd blamed them for being so neglectful. But, as a mother, her perspective had shifted.
You have no idea whom or what you're inviting into your life, her mother warned.
If a PI actually finds Smith and learns he's a bad guy, I don't have to contact him. She looked at her father. I won't do anything to hurt Colt, but at least I'd have answers, so when he's old enough, he can make his own decisions.
I hope you can't find this Smith person. It's easier and cleaner this way.
Her mother looked concerned, as opposed to merely irritated about giving up control.
Why borrow trouble when you can simply tell Colt that you got pregnant on a lark and never knew his father's name? It wouldn't be a lie.
Jenna, her dad said.
What? She snapped. Are we not allowed to call a spade a spade? She likes to boast about her unconventional life. She claims she's not ashamed of that night. I'm not, Gentry insisted. I don't regret it, either. I didn't troll for the worst guy I could find. Smith was pleasant and friendly and made me feel safe enough to do what I did, so chances are he'll be a decent man who has something to offer his son. Again, she thought of the kind of influence someone like Ian would offer and wished he weren't running to the other side of the world.
Given the fact he didn't give his name or want yours, I don't exactly agree with your hunch.
Her dad crossed his arms again. He looked tired, which almost made her back down, but this was too important, and she wanted his support. We were both having fun on vacation. The nickname thing was my idea, and I didn't ask for or give any personal information either. She wrinkled her nose, because that also wasn't something her dad would want to hear. But Colts changed everything, and maybe our son will bring out the best in Smith, too, if I find him.
You've never asked for our approval before, so nothing's changed.
Her mom strode to the door, gripping its handle with unnecessary force.
I hope I won't have to say, I told you so.
If that were true, why did it sound like she did hope for the chance to sneer those exact words? Ian descended the stairs at 9:30 in the morning and spied Gentry straddling Colt with a camera in her hands. She hadn't heard him approach, so he paused on the bottom tread to watch. The photographs on the wall beside him proved her talent, but didn't quite reveal the tenderness he saw unfolding on the floor, in spite of her son's crankiness. She tickled Colt's belly, her voice soft and low, then adjusted her lens. Colt's tiny body flinched at the burst of rapid-fire snapshots. In response, Gentry bent down to gently rub her nose with her son's and kiss his forehead.
Come on, Boo. Give me a smile.
Gentry made a funny sound with her lips, which momentarily caught his attention and snapped a few more images before she felt Ian's presence. She'd pulled her hair into a ponytail, and her cheeks were flushed, presumably from taking Colt on an early morning run.
Hey, sleepyhead, Gentry teased as he crossed to the kitchen to brew some coffee.
He noticed the faint circles beneath her eyes. She'd been working late at night this week and probably not sleeping well.
What's on your agenda today?
Saturday, a day off. He couldn't remember the last time he'd slept so late, but watching Cole all week had required more stamina than he'd predicted. The constancy of attention, Colt's shrill cries, his inability to communicate. In hindsight, that all paralleled his humanitarian work pretty well, except here, he also had to work in isolation. The lack of adult stimulation layered another dimension of difficulty, giving him a new respect for single parents, and Gentry in particular.
Haven't thought past my first cup of coffee.
You know, you can never tell my family I stock coffee. Cabots are tea drinkers, period. My coffee habit is a betrayal of high order. She set the camera on a side table and stretched with a yawn. Ian pretended to lock his lips and toss the key. Gentry knelt beside Colt again, wiggling quackers near Colt, to coax her son into reaching for the gross toy. Ian still couldn't believe she chose to give her son that old duck over something new. He sensed a story there, but wouldn't ask.
"Should I make a big pot or small?" he asked.
"I'm all set, thanks."
She fiddled with Colt's feet while giving Ian another once-over.
"I hate to tell you, but you look like I usually feel."
"You have my sympathy," he joked.
"I warned you this job wouldn't be a cakewalk."
She sat back on her heels. "Of course, your help has made a huge difference this week. I still could use some sleep, but getting a break from Colt, the laundry and grocery shopping, is such a treat. And having an adult to talk to at night might be the best part. It'll be lonely when you go." She gazed around the clean condo. "And messy," he chuckled.
"Neatness is my way of coping with chaos. Commiseration is mine.
That's why I love my blog, a whole community of single moms lending a sympathetic ear and offering advice."
"Do you make any money from it?"
He'd overheard her midnight keyboarding every night, sometimes punctuated by a giggle or by her talking to the screen.
"None. It's a labor of love.
I suppose I could monetize it with ads or become an Amazon affiliate and sell stuff online. First, I'd have to build a bigger audience, and even then, it'd be tough to make decent money. Photography is a different story. It'd be amazing to go pro."
She shrugged noncommittally.
"I can't do either seriously while I've got Colt and CTC taking up most of my time."
"Why not quit CTC and do what you love?"
"Working at CTC is better for my son."
"Because of money?"
"Hell no. Trust me, the old cliche about money not buying happiness, that shit is true. Family, acceptance, respect, love, that's what my working for CTC will give my son."
"Colt can get all that from you, no matter what job you have. When you're happy, he'll be happy."
She shook her head. "My relationship with my family has improved since I started working with them. If I quit to take pictures, I'll revert to being the aimless Cabot on the outside looking in." She stretched her legs in front of her
and rested back on her elbows.
You should know something about family expectations, though, right? It sounds like your family business is charity work.
But unlike you, I actually love it.
Sounds nice, but I wonder... He crossed his arms.
Wonder what?
Nothing. She rolled onto her side and kissed Colt's tummy again. He should get his coffee and get on with his day, but he couldn't let her question go.
Since when have you ever held your tongue?
Gentry sighed and pushed back up to a sitting position. I wonder if you've ever tried doing something else. How do you know what you love most if you've only ever tried one thing? I like pepperoni pizza, but if I never try pizza with pineapple or prosciutto or olives, how do I know pepperoni is best? That explained a lot about her string of odd jobs and whimsical adventures.
Is that the kind of advice you dole out on your blog?
Sometimes.
Good thing you're sticking with CTC, then, he deadpanned.
Gentry laughed. It's good to hear you joke. Don't do it too often, though. I don't want to miss you when you go. He suspected, after another 2 or 3 weeks together, he'd miss Colt and Gentry when he left, too. Another thing he hadn't counted on when he took this job.
Thanks, but something tells me you'll be fine by the time I clear out.
I don't know. I'm pretty dangerous when left to my own devices. She flashed a saucy smile to make him laugh. Then again, Colt and I might not be on our own for long. I've decided to hire a PI to track down Smith.
Really?
All week he'd been studying Colt and imagining what Smith must look like. Good looking, no doubt, with Colt's shock of black hair and sapphire blue eyes. It hadn't been pleasant picturing Gentry fawning all over the alleged hard-to-resist guy, either.
Yes, really? Why do you sound upset? Remember, you said...
I know what I said.
He scowled, resisting the urge to fan himself as the airy room turned oddly close and sticky. On Monday, he'd been spouting off judgments like a would-be father who'd been kept in the dark. 6 days later, his opinions weren't as clear-cut. Now he had a totally different perspective, a protective one. Jenna's opinion on this matter no longer seemed so selfish.
You'll check Smith out before welcoming him into your lives, though, right? I mean, you don't even know the guy. Based on what you told me, he doesn't seem very responsible.
Gentry raised her hand and dryly remarked, Neither of us was very responsible. When Colt cooed, she burst into a wide smile before burying her nose in her son's belly to elicit more giggles. In a mommy voice, she said, And mommy couldn't care less, because look at what I got. I'll never be sorry. Never, never. That right there had become his favorite part of living in this fancy house, where he'd initially felt out of place. Gentry's love for Colt, which she unreservedly showered upon him, filled Ian with the tiniest yearning for something he couldn't even name. An odd ache he'd never had before. He'd been an only child in a home that focused on others' needs over his. He never questioned his parents' love for him, but watching Gentry and Colt inspired a renewed kind of hope or wish for his future, for a family, for something more than the satisfaction he got from saving a life or lessening someone's suffering. The exact hope that had caused his final argument with his dad. A week ago, he couldn't wait to return to Haiti. Each day since then, his discomfort with the condo's swanky features and zip code receded in direct proportion with his increased interest in the two Cavetts rolling around on the floor. He admitted none of this to Gentry as he slipped into the kitchen to make the much-needed coffee. Ian reminded himself of his limited role in their lives and of Smith's claim on both of them. From the other room, he heard Colt's fussing increase.
"Give me strength," Gentry called out.
When Ian returned to the living room with his steaming cup of joe, she was rocking Colt.
6 weeks. That's how long Sarah's precious books said colic would last.
Well, 6 weeks came and went 3 weeks ago. If I had bought those books, I'd demand a refund. It's maddening, getting just little stretches of peace. I pray someday we'll go a whole day with minimal crying. She made a funny face.
Him and me.
At least you can laugh about it.
What choice is there?
Pretty soon he'll be rolling, then crawling, then walking. She rested her cheek against his head.
He won't understand that I'm tired or frustrated or scared. I don't want Colt to remember me as anything other than happy to be his mom. I also want him to be proud of who he is, faults and all.
Her gaze landed on the blue jay perched on the deck railing. Ian detected a note he hadn't heard before, too, a mixture of regret and resolve. Her unguarded statement focused his own lens and helped him see her more clearly. In truth, what she wanted most of all was to give Colt a kind of security she'd never felt. "That's exactly why you're a great mom." He knew she didn't quite believe that yet, but he'd keep reminding her. She snapped her attention back to him.
"Keep saying stuff like that, and you'll find yourself locked up here forever," she teased.
While he drank his coffee, she laid Colt on the floor and stretched his arms out, trying to distract him.
"Actually, I had a thought. If my parents are free to babysit, and you aren't busy tonight, come with me to a certain tea. I'll introduce you to my sister, Colby."
"Meet your sister?" He choked on his coffee and pinched his nose to make sure that none dripped down his face.
"Chill. This isn't a date.
Colby runs the Maverick Foundation and might be able to help you fund your plans. There's no plot to trap you, I promise." Then she playfully twisted her spine to reveal her crossed fingers.
"Seriously, though, it's a great restaurant. You've helped me so much this week. Let me try to help you. When you do leave, I'll make a personal donation to your cause, but Colby might be able to be a long-term partner."
"That's very generous." He scratched the back of his head.
"I can't promise anything, but who knows?"
Gentry shifted Colt to her lap with his back against her belly and jiggled him. Nothing she tried stopped his tears. She closed her eyes, uttering to herself,
"Oh, Boo, please. You might meet your daddy soon. If you can't stop crying, you'll scare him away."
Ian must have huffed or made some other unintentional sound that drew her attention.
"Got something to say, McJay?"
He shook his head and raised his empty coffee mug.
"Time for a refill."
He retreated to the kitchen to regroup. Before pouring himself a second cup, he closed his eyes and rested his forehead against the refrigerator.
He should study the Maverick Foundation's website and plan a list of questions, not worry about whether or not Smith would crash into this household and destroy the beautiful world Gentry hoped to create for her son.
By 7 o'clock, Ian found himself seated in the most elegant restaurant he'd ever visited. If he didn't know better, he'd swear he'd stepped onto a movie set. Long-range views of the lake eclipsed the ones from Gentry's home,
which were partly obscured by forest. From their table by the floor-to-ceiling open glass doors, he could see some of the waterfront homes and the blue and white sails on two sunfish racing across the lake's choppy surface. Soft peach light spilled into the restaurant, along with the sweet scent of evening primrose and lilies from the flower beds surrounding the adjacent patio. The celebratory sound of tinkling glasses and silverware should have fostered a festive or romantic mood. If he were a normal man, it would have done both. Instead of enjoying the setting, he thought of his father and Archer and what they would think of seeing him idly sitting here. The Cabots and everything they owned embodied the privilege of wealth. Google searches had taught Ian that Jed Cabot was self-made. His older kids hadn't known extreme wealth until their teens. No doubt, they earnestly worked hard and brushed up against obstacles from time to time, but they all now enjoyed a life free of worrying about money or security or hunger or anything serious, as far as he could tell. Ian glanced around the dining room, watching others laughing and leaving $50 and $60 meals partially uneaten. Those scraps could feed many starving homeless people right here in Oregon, let alone around the world. "You seem unhappy. What gives?" Gentry sipped her blueberry martini, her long red locks spilling over the straps of the gold dress that looked more like a slip than an outfit. "Nothing." He scanned the menu again to divert his attention from her figure. Wild Scottish langoustine, gulf shrimp with fiddlehead ferns, and an almond-grilled Wagyu dish for $100. Nothing particularly recognizable or affordable. "If you can't decide, the whole poached lobster tail with grilled romaine and citrus is fabulous." She smiled, oblivious to the fact that the price tag for that dish would feed a Haitian family for weeks. "God, it feels so good to be dressed up. It's my first night out without Colt since his birth." He set down the menu, self-conscious about his casual cotton shirt. It had a collar, at least, but most of the other men wore jackets. He swiped at the perspiration along his hairline. Gentry's bracelets jangled as they slid down her arm. She put her menu aside and leaned forward. "I wish you'd say what's on your mind. When people keep their thoughts to themselves, I assume the worst." He fiddled with his fork, avoiding her gaze. Pride had never stopped him before, but he could barely swallow tonight. "I can't afford to eat here." "It's my treat, Ian." She waved her hand as if wiping that concern off the table ended the discussion. "I can't let you do that." She set her elbows on the table, forearms crossed in front of her body. "You know, all week I've envied your great posture, but now I'm thinking maybe there's a giant stick up your..." "Hey," Gentry laughed. "I'm paying for dinner as a thank you for all the extra hours you put in while I played catch-up at work." He suspected she'd invent reasons until he gave in, so he stopped arguing. "Thank you." Her eyes narrowed. "Yet still you look tense and unhappy." "It's hard to watch all these people leave their meals unfinished, as if there aren't people all over Portland who are hungry." He expected her to slap him with another McJ remark, which he probably deserved. Instead, Gentry surveyed the room, her gaze following the waiters and busboys clearing tables and pouring refills. Sighing, she sat back and folded her hands in her lap.
It must be impossible to enjoy normal life if you can't stop making comparisons.
This is hardly the normal life.
He gestured around the space with one hand.
This is exceptional wealth.
You say that like wealth is bad.
It's not bad, per se.
He'd talked himself into a corner. Another reason to hasten back to his own friends, who shared his experiences and sensibilities.
Waste is bad. A lack of gratitude is annoying.
Why is that all you see?
I see a restaurant that employs more than 24 people, giving them all livelihoods. Not to mention the many patrons who contribute to the foundation, which donates to places like the Angel House.
As she spoke, her spine became more erect. Cabot Tea employs hundreds of people in multiple states, supporting all those families. And even frivolous little old me, every time I spend my money to buy an outfit or pedicure, that's keeping someone else employed. If people like me, like those in this room, stop enjoying some of the privilege of their wealth, then the economy shifts and others suffer. Right?
He'd pissed her off. He should have known not to let her goad him into talking. I didn't mean to offend you. You asked me to be honest.
I did, and I'm not mad. I don't deny that I, and others, can sometimes be wasteful and unappreciative. Everyone can. You want to talk about that, or how fortunate people could become more aware, compassionate, and helpful? I'm all ears, as long as you don't act like all wealthy people are selfish jerks.
She drummed her fingers on the table.
And here's something else to think about. Denying yourself the comforts of home by living in places like Haiti might let you pretend that you don't have it better than others, but you'll always have it better because you're free to come home where clean water and food and healthcare aren't scarce. She sat back. It's good to appreciate what you have and to be generous and giving, Ian, but you shouldn't treat good fortune like a guilty burden, either.
That insight would have shocked him before he knew her better. But Gentry Cabot had a shrewd way of viewing things and a no-holds-barred rule when it came to opinions. A quick read through her blog proved that much. Before he could respond, an elegant woman approached the table. Long and lithe, she wore a tailored, sleeveless white silk dress. She looked slightly familiar, but he couldn't place her.
Colby!
Gentry stood to hug her sister. They didn't look alike, but Colby did resemble her father, especially in the eyes, which turned upward at their outer edges.
This is Ian.
He stood and shook Colby's hand.
Nice to meet you.
She gestured for him to retake his seat. It's nice to finally meet you. Sarah raves about your mother and the Angel House. And thanks to your help, Gentry's like a new person this week.
Colt can be a handful, so you both deserve a little pampering tonight.
Gentry shot Ian a pointed look.
Excellent point and timing, actually.
Gentry took her seat and gestured to an open chair.
Can you join us for a second?
Sure. Colby settled onto the empty seat.
Ian and I were discussing his EMT training program in Haiti. He and his partners are looking for more donors or alliances.
Gentry shrugged off the details.
He can explain it better than me. But I thought maybe the Maverick Foundation might be interested in helping such a worthy cause.
Colby smiled, but years of watching his parents ask for donations had taught Ian how to spot an, I love the idea, but I can't help, expression.
I'd love to hear more about your experiences,
but unfortunately, our foundation's stated mission is to serve the people of Oregon. We don't have the resources to fund international projects. She elbowed Gentry. Of course, if the Charity launch takes off, the foundation could amend that position in the future. Tell me what you need. Maybe I can put you in contact with others who can help now.
We're in the early stages. My partner, Archer, is a British doctor, but he's been working in Haiti for more than a decade. Haitians have extremely poor access to decent medical care. Unless someone's in imminent danger of death, hospitals won't even fill a prescription from their own stock. Families need to go elsewhere to buy the medication, assuming they can afford it. If the hospital does fill it, then the family has to restock it as soon as possible. Both women's mouths fell open, so he didn't elaborate on the many other ways that medical care was lacking. Anyway, we realize we can't fix that systemic problem, but hope to improve ambulatory care. Currently, emergency patients walk to the hospital, or wait for a ride, or come on motorcycles, if at all. If we train locals to be EMTs and provide ambulances and supplies, it'll give more people a fighting chance for a decent prognosis.
I can't even imagine that. Colby tossed her tawny hair over her shoulder and leaned forward. What are your biggest obstacles?
Haiti's infrastructure, for starters. They're still rebuilding from the earthquake and subsequent hurricanes, and much of the money sent there has been diverted to the wrong people. Another major challenge will be setting up a steady pipeline of supplies.
As he spoke to Colby, Gentry's expression shifted to something uncharacteristically somber. Have you partnered with anyone specific yet? Colby asked.
Not yet. At this point, it's been mostly random donations. We've received enough money to rent an old garage structure and hire one local, Stanley, to start working with us. We still need so much more, including vehicles.
Colby sat back, her expression thoughtful.
I'm sorry I can't commit funding, but let me scroll through my contacts. I've met a lot of philanthropists this past year. Maybe I can make some introductions while you're in town?
I appreciate any help. Thank you. Ian glanced at Gentry, whose gaze remained fixed on the flickering candle on their table.
I'm sorry I can't do more. Colby touched her sister's arm. But I'll get back to you with anything I learn as soon as possible.
Thanks, Colby. I knew you'd help. Gentry raised her martini glass, but her impish smile didn't reappear.
Frankly, I'm surprised you're not plotting to keep Ian around.
Gentry's face blanked for the briefest moment, but she snapped right back to reality.
He's been great, but you know me. I never count on anyone for long. No point in planning out the future when it never turns out how you expect.
My gypsy-spirited sister, Colby teased. If I didn't know you better, I'd swear you were related to my mother instead of Jenna.
Your mom would kill you for saying that.
Gentry's left brow shot up. Colby bumped her sister's shoulder.
I'm sure she likes you more than she lets on. Your only crime is being Jenna's daughter.
Who can blame Leslie for not liking my mother? Sometimes even I can't stand her.
You don't mean that? Colby cast Ian a quick glance, as if he'd think less of Gentry for the biting remark. He'd met Jenna, so he understood Gentry just fine.
The waiter arrived, interrupting them.
May I take your orders?
Colby stood. I'll let you enjoy your night. The oysters are excellent, by the way. And Ian, I'll get you some helpful information soon.
Thanks, he said, as she waved goodbye.
He scanned the menu while Gentry ordered.
The cheapest item was some kind of hand-cut pasta and cheese with Australian truffles that he had no idea how to pronounce. When it was his turn, he said, "I'll take the fancy mac and cheese, thanks."